So we're continuing a slight reflection on the, I wouldn't say accidental, but they're not, it's not deliberate relationality between Acts and John. In the last discussion, the last prayer of Jesus before he's arrested. So this is, as we recall, the high priestly prayer that Jesus prays after he's having his private last moments with his disciples, where he warns them that he will be arrested, that things are going to go south pretty quickly, but that the Father has control of the whole thing. He stops then the conversation, looks to his Father, and then has a private conversation with his Father, which the disciples evidently overheard. But you see that this is designed, that Luke in Acts of the Apostles parallels this same story, which he recounts in the Gospel according to Luke, with now the church. That the church has to carry on the mission of Christ. And the way in which it happens is that the disciples have to do what Jesus did. And so we skipped a few chapters, two of them to be exact, to in Acts of the Apostles from where we were yesterday to where we are today. Yesterday, Paul leaves Ephesus, and he has his farewell discourse just with his disciples after he founds the church in Ephesus. He appoints bishops and priests there to be able to govern and to guide the church. He says, some of you will betray the gospel I gave you, but who knows who that is, and we'll just let the Spirit take over. Then he leaves. And then after he leaves, he travels all the way around the Mediterranean on his way back to Jerusalem. And the thing is Paul knows at this point that when he gets to Jerusalem, it's going to go south for him too. Because we've had that conversation about the circumcision Gentile question that came up a few weeks ago. Do the Gentiles have to be circumcised in order to be baptized? Do non-Jews have to become Jewish in order to become Christians? Paul and the Church of Antioch and many of the other churches all agreed that they don't need to, that God's grace works above cultural boundaries, but they still have to prevent against scandal because people sometimes, even if they've received the faith, will often try to interpret the faith in simply visible means. So don't eat the meat that sacrificed to idols. Don't eat anything that's strangled. Not because, and Paul would say in one of his other letters, not because they're intrinsically evil, but because it freaks people out when you do. So just don't. But for your own freedom, you just know that you're not bound. So eventually he gets arrested. Well, he's about to get arrested because all the people that Paul ticked off are waiting for him. So he heads back to Jerusalem, and in one of the towns along the way, a prophet in one of the local churches, they still called them prophets, they stopped calling them prophets by the end of the first century, but a prophet in the town all of a sudden says, the Holy Spirit is saying he's going to get arrested, and it's going to go south for him. That's not the exact phrasing, but it's close enough. And all of a sudden, the entire community goes, well, don't go to Jerusalem then. Stay here. And even Luke, in the Acts of the Apostles, he uses the we, not the royal we, but I was there. And I didn't want him to go either. But Paul wouldn't be dissuaded. He knew exactly what he needed to do. He had to go back to Jerusalem to begin his final mission. Does that sound familiar? He has to go all the way back to Jerusalem, just as Jesus, halfway through Luke's gospel, he sets his eyes towards Jerusalem, which is symbolically stating that he is going to his death. Paul goes back to Jerusalem knowing that he is going to die, and the moment that he arrives, chaos, total chaos. And all the people, Christians included, that hate Paul for what they felt was the destruction of their culture and their way of life, gang up and all of a sudden cause a riot around him. The funny thing about the Romans is Romans don't really care about anything except for public order. You can say anything, do anything, whatever, just as long as you do it peaceably. And this is why I find it very funny that the Roman Empire of old is very similar to our modern empire. You can say anything, do anything in private, whatever, but just as long as you don't cause any public kerfluffle, no one cares about your business. And the other element of Roman life, which you see in Paul's own passion story, is that after he's arrested, he he declares he's a Roman citizen. It's like if you get arrested in Mexico, then all of a sudden, you can't do this to me, I'm a Canadian, or you can't do this to me, I'm an American. That's the equivalent. That all of a sudden, oh, wait, no, you mean our legal system says we can't harm you. Oh, well, so you're protected now. Because what they were about to do to him prior to that was definitely not going to be nice. In fact, the way that Paul gets martyred is he just gets his head cut off. They have to give him a nice, clean death because they can't actually torture Roman citizens like they did with, say, like they can't torture people like they did St. Peter or like Christ. Paul has this sort of protection to him. But Paul even uses the protection not for his own sake. He appeals to Caesar, which is what brings him to the final movement of his mission. So just as Jesus went back to Jerusalem to be kicked out of Jerusalem and killed outside the city walls, Paul goes back to Jerusalem to culminate his mission in Rome, which becomes the symbolic move where the church becomes for everybody. That the entire drama of all those people who are out to get him and to kill him are actually playing into God's hands, just as Jesus said at the Last Supper about his own suffering and death. Do not be afraid, Christ says. I have conquered the world. He says this just before he's about to be arrested and knows it. Paul doesn't quite know how this is all going to play out, especially as you see in the coming days, well, depending on what readings they give you, how this whole kind of thing unfolds in the coming days, shipwrecks, riots, all of these things. But you see, in a sense, this grand drama of all these different conflicting interests, and somehow Paul, by his basic fidelity, is seeing the way through it all to find the glory of God, or to reveal the glory of God. And there's two areas in which I think that this is really prevalent or prominent in our own day. And one of them is, I'll just start with the today saints, Nereus and Achilleus. We know next to nothing about them. We just know that they were martyred between the 1st and 3rd centuries, because the earliest documentation we have about their life is from the 4th century, but we have seen their graves. So they are pretty old. And the story goes that these two men were Roman soldiers. And then they eventually heard the proclamation of Christianity and then said, we ain't fighting anymore. And so the imperial authorities got very nervous. Not because these men had a flight of conscience. A conscience is scary for any society on the verge of perdition. But what they're really nervous about is if these guys start saying, I'm going to not fight, their next thought is, what happens if everybody doesn't fight? Our entire way of life will disappear. And so the exact same drama that you see with the Jewish Christians is now playing out among Roman people as well. Jews and Gentiles, we share the same problem. We all want togetherness. We all want to be bound together into one happy community, and outliers, people that are on the outside, are very scary and dangerous. So these two men were killed because they chose not to fight. It's an interesting thing. The second thing is what's happening today. Today's downtown, we're having the whole March for Life. And I'll go there. We're having the Mass this morning because I just don't like not celebrating my own Mass, but I'm still going downtown for the March for Life. And the interesting thing about it is not that the tragedy that we need to do this. What I find is particularly troubling is that the multi-sides of this very same problem are not acknowledged as a part of a larger problem. Nereus and Achilleus were faithful because they were able to disengage from the world for the good of others and for the glory of God. For a lot of our modern public debates, in the end, it's just, what do I get out of it? And I found it to be very, very tragic, incredibly tragic, the fact that both are, well, not both, there's many things, our use of the environment, the way we use money, the way we use our children, the way we use the way we treat our elderly, the way everything, all of this is connected to a worldly heart and self-centeredness. And the funny, and it's not a happy funny, it's a sad funny, the only way out of this is a change of heart. to look at the world differently, to not be bound by what we hope to see for the future, but to do the right thing today. If our world makes it really hard for a young woman to be a mother, then forget the world and take care of her. If the world is a dangerous place and a scary one for a person who is getting old and sick and suffering, forget the world, take care of them. If the world is filled with injustice and economic inequality and environmental destruction, forget the world, do the right thing. We don't do that. Instead, we play the blame game. It's your fault, it's your fault, it's your fault, it's your fault, it's your fault. And what Paul can really show us, and what he mirrored in the life of Christ, is to be able to own his own shame, to use it as a gift for other people. I never tire of rejoicing to hear Paul say, "I persecuted Christians. I was a nasty, arrogant, stupid man. But God forgave me out of his abundant mercy." That's the sort of witness that when Nereus and Achilles hear it, they are willing to break off the shackles of their imperial enslavement and to be able to live for others. Yes, of course, it might result in people hating us, and you'll see tomorrow as the whole trial unfolds. But it is so much better to live for God, because this world is passing away. Nobody cares about the Romans anymore, except for history. Canada will become a memory. But what will matter is when you meet all those people for whom you worked for in heaven, and you realize that they will be the ones that last, because God has permanently bound himself to them.